We've been speaking about portals. This is, of course, only a metaphor. Access points into the state of presence. Of course, you don't linger inside the portal. A portal is there to go through. Or one good another way of putting it is that the unconditioned comes through it, emerges through it, all just a matter of perspective. Even surrender, after a while, disappears. The portal disappears as a portal because it becomes your natural state, non-resistance as your natural state. Surrender is the transition between resistance and non-resistance. You relinquish resistance, and that's surrender. When resistance doesn't arise anymore to what is, there's no surrender anymore. And even the present moment, which is the main portal, one could say, becomes simply the state of presence. And it's not so much needing to not move to past and future, because that movement doesn't occur anymore. And they're simply the timeless now. So you use as your practice here, of course, always the main portal is the now, and then surrender takes you into now. Every portal takes you into now. Death takes you into now. The inner body, which we may address this afternoon, takes you into now, into the state of attention, awareness, aware presence, in which thought becomes secondary or disappears altogether. In any case, thought no longer dominates you. Thought loses its power to make you unhappy, because you don't take it that seriously anymore. Do you remember our practice for today? Not taking thoughts that seriously anymore. And then you see that what has, to a large extent, what makes you unhappy is not that situation or that place or that person, that life situation. It's thoughts about it, and every life story consists of thoughts. And that's where people's identity lies. And those thoughts tell you something. Those thoughts interpret something according to their conditioning. And there's never, suffering doesn't arise from pain, could happen, but suffering, it's never in the situation. The situation is as it is. Even several, Shakespeare saw that already. Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. That, of course, started when they ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, beginning of thought. So the interpretation may still happen, but you don't take them that seriously anymore. And then you realize in any situation the unhappiness arises out of thought, out of the story that you weave around the simplicity of this moment. And often this moment doesn't fit into the story. So there's a clash between where you as the story-based me want to be, where you want to be, who you want to be, what you want to be, who you want to be with, what you want to be doing as the story-based entity, me, and where you are, that clash. Who you are, where you are, who you are with, what you are doing. I'm not supposed to be doing this. It doesn't fit into this, the story of me, how it's supposed to unfold. So this is the great renunciation, compared to which other renunciations are quite insignificant, secondary, and often don't work. Renounce material possessions, renounce sexuality, you can renounce all kinds of things, status, but very quickly a new mental image forms as me, the one who has renounced. And that happens with very easily. It happens so insidiously. The ego comes in through the back door. You can go and shave your head, renounce your name, adopt a spiritual name, put on robes. And the idea behind it is beautiful. It's letting go of your whole form identity. But since the ego is so insidious, it comes in through the back door, and now that you've put on the robes and shaved your head and walk with an alms bowl, if you become a Buddhist monk, it could be many other things, very subtly an image forms of you have a new identity. Of course you have. You're respected Buddhist monk. And people, well, if you live in the East, in the West, they wouldn't care less, but so if you come with your alms bowl in Thailand, they will put things in and show their reverence, and then that could enhance your sense of self in a very subtle way. Or if you go to the West, with your alms bowl, they might say, why don't you work for a living? So that doesn't feed your ego that much. So very easy to renounce can very easily create a new self-image and a new story now. You become the renunciant. It's shifted. And there's a me that feels in some way special. Can happen. Doesn't always happen. Can easily happen. But the alternate renunciation, there, those things cannot happen, because now you renounce the very root of the false self. The very root is renounced, and that is the need to think. Thought itself is renounced. And then you see how addictive thought is. It is not easily renounced. It comes back. In waves. Thought waves come back. And what can you do? You watch the thought waves come back. You may get drawn in, lost in thought again, until you come out. And and then presence is there for a moment, you're awake, alert. And then another thought wave may come. And you may still be there as the witness of the thought wave, not totally taken over, in which case it subsides quickly. If you get totally drawn in, it will linger for much longer, a whole thought movement. Now, this isn't something that we are trying to do. It's something we are allowing to happen. If you get into the position of trying to do it, it becomes problematic again, and the me comes back in. We are not trying to become free of thought, but the state of presence is emerging already and wants to emerge. We simply allow that to emerge. We cooperate with it. So a great help here, especially here, because there's such enormous momentum in the human mind, is to, again, I prefer to use the word allow, is to allow your attention to sink into the body rather than being totally head-centered. You allow your attention to sink down into the field of body. And that becomes an anchor for staying present. And there are ancient meditation methods that are designed precisely to take your attention out of thought stream so that it's not all your attention is absorbed by thought streams, which is the normal state. They take attention into body. And so I believe the ashram is offering a meditation tonight, which I have not experienced personally, but I'm told it puts you in touch with the body, so it must be good. And it's probably related in some way to the old Buddhist meditation called Vipassana, which some of you know, which takes attention into the body. Here, I'm not making it into a technique as such. Simply, I'm pointing to the possibility of sensing, as you sit here, sensing the aliveness inside your body. And then the body becomes a portal. And at first it appears that, yes, the body, at first you might sense certain feelings. And then you go a little deeper and there's simply a sense of spaciousness. So the body becomes a portal. At first it might appear as if what I call the inner body is another object that arises in your awareness. But as you move deeper, and the observer and observed merge, so it's no longer a sense of me up here, sensing the body down here, but the two becoming one. So there is a generalized sense of aware presence that pervades the entire body. So one could say that aliveness, it's not confined to the body because the whole world comes alive when presence arises and you're not deadening everything through conceptualization. But you sense great aliveness, and that is in the entire energy field of the body. And you dwell in that, you are that. Then the mind hasn't got your attention anymore. It can't manufacture thoughts continuously because your attention is here. You also connect a vast field of intelligence that is the beginning of that vast intelligence, the one intelligence out of which the whole universe has come, that is manifests itself as the flower, the tree, the planet, the sun, the galaxies, and is also, he has brought into being what appears to be a physical body temporarily, which contains great intelligence, every cell, every organ. No human mind could control the functions of the human body. They put all the computers together in the world. It couldn't control the functions of a single body because it requires enormous intelligence to coordinate thousands of functions. And this happens continuously through that intelligence that indwells here, not thinking. The body, it doesn't think about how it's doing it, just as the flower doesn't think about how to become a flower. It happens. And so, you already, by entering that portal, you have access to that vastness of intelligence. So, sensing that aliveness. At first, you may feel certain parts of the body more strongly than others, hands or feet, and that's fine. And then sense a generalized aliveness in here. And that's where part of your attention is within. Some people feel, as I said, certain parts more strongly. Some people feel the belly. Some people feel hands or arms. Some people, eventually you will sense a generalized aliveness, and you cannot locate necessarily any particular part of the body anymore, nor do you have to. If you see certain Buddha statues, you'll see, I'm not talking now of the Chinese Buddha with a huge belly, but other Buddhas, they have a slight belly, very slight. And the Buddha is resting here in the body. So there are practices that can take you into the body. What I'm suggesting here, of these are helpful. I'm suggesting here you can do it without needing to go through any practice, although if you have an additional practice, that is helpful. I may take you into the body today or at some point and make it almost into a meditation. We may do that. But I want to avoid giving you techniques as such, and sensing the inner body is beyond technique. It's too simple for that. And see how much easier it is when you inhabit the body with some of your attention to be here in the state of simple, alert awareness. And so there is, you're aware of what arises in your sense perceptions, the words in this case, And you sense the energy field of the inner body. And there's no thought arising anymore. Or very little thought. And you can do that as you go out into nature. You sit on a bench, on the grass. You use the portal of the inner body. And then start looking around. Beautiful practice. And you look at all the different forms of life around you. And you just look at each form in that innocent perception that does not interpret or label what is being perceived. And now it becomes easy because your attention is anchored here. So that's perhaps the greatest, if you can, that transition from needing to interpret and needing to label to being free of the need to interpret and label, not that you have lost your ability, you have don't know what things are anymore. No, the need is gone. You have the freedom not to think. The freedom not to label, not to interpret, to allow to be. And in that, a greater intelligence comes in. It's almost as if through your eyes, that greater intelligence were looking at the world of form and enjoying it, knowing deep down to be a manifestation of itself, knowing the world of form to be a manifestation of itself. So it sounds at first insignificant to be sitting there and simply practicing watching without interpretation. Is the greatest shift in consciousness that can happen to you. That simple thing of sitting somewhere, and we are starting with an easy situation. You are not being challenged. A different matter arises, we will address that, when life challenges you. And then thought will rush in. And then all the patterns of thought and emotion will rush in, want to rush in. We'll put that aside for a moment. Let's first of all see in situations that are helpful, non-challenging. This, of course, is one. And being in the ashram here is another. And here, to be able to sit somewhere, stand somewhere, connect with the inner body, and perceive free of thought, or not perhaps entirely free of thought. Perhaps labels will come and go. And then there's a gap before the next label arises. Another, it goes. You're not fighting any thought. If it comes, it's allowed. Nothing important. Sometimes thought will want to take you out of that and pretend. Any thought will want your attention back. The mind will try, and it's very clever. The human mind is clever. It will try to get your attention back through some interpretation to do with your sense perceptions or something totally different that you really must give your attention to now. Right now, you must think about this. It's really important. So the mind will attempt to get to draw your attention out of the now, out of the body, into back into itself. Once you know that, you can watch it and see, oh, there it is. And then you're back in presence. You can watch the river. So you can sit by the river and watch it. Connect with the inner body and be there. The miracle then has happened. You are not perceiving any longer through the conditioned mind. That's and the need to think isn't there anymore. The compulsion. You are free not to think. The only thing that I have achieved in life, although it's not an achievement at all, is I don't need to think. Somebody some years ago asked me, what have you achieved? And at that time I hadn't written the book yet, so I hadn't achieved anything. And all I could say was, well, I don't need to think anymore. This is not highly regarded in our culture. And it's not the case that you cannot function anymore, although at first it is a new way of functioning. It took me some years to function in this world in that state because I had no guidance and no teacher. So that state at first overtook me, and I lost all interest even in functioning in this world. And then gradually the ability to function in the new state came back. But you have better guidance than I had. And so you do not need to become dysfunctional as the new state of consciousness arises. It's happened to people. Ramana Maharshi became, one could say, dysfunctional because he didn't even put food in his mouth anymore. So in Western terms, certainly it would be called dysfunctional. But fortunately, in India, they recognized here that there was something there that was of great value. And so they didn't put him away. In the West, they would have. So as the new arises, of course it's a new way of being in the world, a new way of interacting, a new way of perceiving. And of course, first, it's strange at first. So I'm suggesting become familiar with that and allow it to happen at first, especially as you contemplate nature, the world of nature, whether it be the river or the trees, and enter that state of perception that is free of labeling. And you can sense the alertness that is there underneath the perception, the alertness that makes the perception possible, the presence through which the perception happens, as you sense it as that underlying stillness that fills your entire being. But it's also all around. There's a field of stillness, and there are the phenomena that you are perceiving. And you are the field. And that includes this. And so it's not really the body. The body can give you access to that field as a portal. And then when you go through that portal, a vastness opens up. So you don't become confined in the body. And so you sit and watch the movement of the river, perhaps, the movement of the little animals, and perhaps the movement of people. And there are always the two dimensions as you watch that which you are perceiving and that which makes the perception possible, the field, the spaciousness. So you dwell in both worlds, the world of form and the formless. Or rather, you dwell within the formless and can still interact with the world of form. So this is how you can use these surroundings here. and the river. And then everything one could say that you contemplate is teaching you, especially nature, stillness, especially the river. And you bring something to it. Your perceptions completes it. I don't want to go into any kind of philosophical speculation or say anything that requires belief on your part, but I'm only suggesting, would the river even be there if you were not there? Perceiving it, being conscious of it, are not the two needed for the river to be there? And that sacredness, is that not both within and without? Would the sacredness be there without anybody knowing it? And the same you practice in your room. Now, almost certainly, the room that you are in here is not as comfortable as home, unless you're an ascetic monk or nun. And there are certain things that you may dislike. It's not functional, it's not good enough. But you can sit there also and contemplate the things in the room, sit on a chair, just for a few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and you contemplate and allow it also to be as it is at this moment, and no labeling. Nothing's labeled. I was surprised by that state one morning when I woke up after dreadful suffering during the night, during which the mind-made self dissolved. It couldn't sustain itself any longer. It had created so much suffering that it self-destructed when I couldn't live with myself any longer. And the self that I couldn't live with dissolved suddenly. And what was left was I. Presence. I am presence. Nothing in particular, just that. And so I woke up and I opened my eyes and I looked at the room. For the first time, without labeling anything. And I knew without labeling it that everything was alive. And I was astonished. And I walked around the city in that state of non-labeling, and I didn't even know that I wasn't labeling. I knew nothing. All I knew was there was so much peace suddenly, even in the city. So much, the peace is everywhere. I didn't know why. I didn't know that my mind had virtually stopped. Later I realized it when a Buddhist monk talked to me and talked about the cessation of mind. I said, oh, that's what it is. And now I'm suggesting that this is not something that happens only to a few. There are many human beings that I have met that have come to the teaching who are already stepping out of mind identification and entering that state. Not all at once in most cases, that's relatively rare, but it happens. It means not all at once do they dwell in that state continuously. You can only enter it now, but dwelling in it continuously may take a little while. That's where time is still needed. Time is not needed to enter that state. It's now. So that's the renunciation of thought and an enormous depth opens up suddenly. You become very deep. And you realize how deep and mysterious every phenomenon is, every natural phenomenon. How you have been reducing it to something, to an abstraction, by labeling everything, interpreting everything. So this is the practice that I suggest to you in the days to come, to be here as the observing presence, to invite that state that is free of thought. And if thought arises, you simply recognize it as thought without making it into a problem. So, then we come, this is perhaps the main practice, and use it then also when you move, not just when you sit. First, when you sit, then you move between here and your room. And there are steps. And be there with every step and watch as you walk. Without making it into some formalized thing. In Buddhism, there's a walking meditation practice, but it's very heavily formalized. So you walk, the foot goes down, left foot touches, and then goes. Right foot lifts up. And you're there with every movement. You don't have to do it like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. If you're familiar with Tai Chi or have practiced it, that is one technique that is helpful in bringing you completely into the present. And stopping your mind, because you cannot practice Tai Chi and think. You won't be very good at it. You cannot practice Tai Chi and be looking forward to the end of your movement. That wouldn't this bad practitioner. So that is, again, a helpful practice, but if it's confined to your practice and the rest of your life, you go back to the mind-identified state, it's not helpful. It can be a helpful additional practice. Moving. In Tai Chi, your hand moves from here to there, let's say. I've never learned it. I don't know Tai Chi at all. I only know presence. So the hand moves. And usually in every movement, you want to be at the end of the movement. That's the mind projection of wanting the end result, of wanting, of making this moment a means to an end. Even when you reach out for a glass, you want to be there already. And then when you grasp the glass of water, you already want it to be here. And before it's here, you want the water already to be in your stomach. It's always looking to the... You're being pulled by the mental projection of future. That's how most people live. The future pull, which is a mental projection, determines their actions, and they're being pulled. They're pursuing always the mental projection in every movement. And so to bring presence into a movement means it's at no stage is this movement a means to an end. You don't need to arrive. You're here already. You're here, here, here.